It's the Listen Up Milwaukee podcast. And welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Steve Italiano, and I am joined today again by my co-host, Aaron Koenig. Welcome, Aaron.
Thank you.
So we're going to do one of our quarterly, every couple months, movie reviews. And today we are going to talk about Thor Ragnarok. Because we actually both got a chance to see it opening weekend, so it's still pretty fresh out there in the world. And so we're going to talk about that. So you saw it opening weekend, obviously, Aaron?
When did I see it? Last Friday? I thought it opened the week before that, but maybe not.
Nope, November 4th. So.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, so then we did.
You're right on the cutting edge of things. How about that for a change?
How? Actually, I saw it on the 3rd. I saw it on that Friday.
Well, wasn't Friday the 4th?
I had to check my calendar. The 4th was Saturday.
Oh, well, it opened the 3rd. I'm sorry. It opened Friday night. So, yeah, we saw it on Saturday? We saw it on Saturday as well. And I was kind of surprised there were seats available, you know, especially in this day and age where the seats are bigger, the rows are wider, and you don't have quite as many. But admittedly, I think it was on 5 screens at the multiplex we went to. So,
gracious.
Yeah, it was just every half hour. Every half hour you could have seen it. And actually, we could have seen it opening night, too, if we wanted to go to kind of an off-hour show. You know how things are always like 7, 9. And, but anyway, so Thor Ragnarok, starring, what's his face? Is it Chris Hemsworth? Is he the one?
Hemsworth? Or, I don't know. Maybe it is Hemsworth. I don't know.
Oh.
Hot. That's what it is.
Oh, that's... That's all that matters, right?
That's all that matters.
How many times did Thor take off his shirt, anyway?
I don't know, but the one time towards the end, I didn't mean to, but I go, good Lord. The kid is just, he's just a genetically perfect person. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
All right. Well, then I guess I know how you felt about the film.
Yeah.
I guess we should start off by saying there'll probably be some spoilers in this if you haven't seen it yet. Oh. And it was funny because one of the cable channels was running the other two Thor movies all weekend, of course. Mm-hmm. So I kind of got my binge on of Thor. And it was a little nice to see kind of what had happened with the character and how it progressed a little bit, but so we'll talk about the movie now. So spoiler alerts, if you don't want to know about what happens and listen to this after you see it, great. So the movie starts out with Thor in chains. He's been captured by some beastie, some fire god, some fire demon in hell, it looks like.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, big horns.
And it starts out with a joke.
I loved that there was so much levity and just snide remarks, and because usually Loki's the kind of the comic relief, but man, Thor was on his game this movie. It was hilarious.
Yeah, it kind of starts out with him narrating obviously what's going on, and of course he frees himself and some, you know, battle ensues and off he goes back home to find his father, because he's been away for quite a few years from Asgard. He alludes to hunting for Infinity Stones, which I think will tie in to the next Marvel movie, which is is it another Captain America one? Captain America Infinity Wars, or is it Avengers Infinity Wars? I'm sorry.
Oh, there you go. I was wondering if it was going to be an Avengers or what's the one with, brain dead. The one with Chris Pratt.
Guardians of the Galaxy?
Yeah. I thought, because weren't they searching for Infinity Stones?
Well, they in the yeah, I mean, in the first one, they came across the Infinity Stones, and again, I am not very well versed in the whole Marvel universe,
yeah, but they're nuts listening to us today.
So I did read comic books as a kid, but I was not. It was not my Bible. It was not my life. It was not my, you know, center of my entire world. So, but he alludes to that. So I was kind of wondering, was that him on his own, or are we alluding to something that's going to be coming out later? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I really did like how they're starting to cross all the crossovers they're doing. Like Doctor Strange makes an appearance in this one. What are you doing here? Get off my planet, kind of thing.
Well, you know, and it was that scene that was at the end of Doctor Strange.
Mm-hmm, right.
Yeah, so they just kind of played that again and put it in perspective.
Yeah.
With the self-filling beer mug that, you know, that made people in the theater. I think that made a lot of men in the theater that was their good God moment. Keep your shirt on. Just keep that beer filled.
It was like an Oktoberfest stein.
Yeah, I want to say it was probably at least a full liter, wasn't it? I would at yeah, least a liter or two. So we find Thor. He goes back to Asgard to find out that his brother Loki is basically living the high life, pretending he's Odin.
Right.
And so then they go looking for, I kind of like, well, the whole theme of this movie is it is very light. You know, one review I read, and I don't read a lot of reviews on movies because I don't want to get too much information before I go in, but they kind of liken like the first two standalone Thor movies, he was like a tragic Shakespearean character. And this, he kind of busted out of his shell and was kind of more, a lot more levity, a lot more joking, and almost some tongue in cheek, poking fun at themselves.
Oh, yeah.
Throughout it. But I kind of like the fact where Thor presses Loki, "Where did you do with our father?" And they go back to Earth, and Loki had put him in a home.
Right. Right. Which is destroyed. Yeah.
Well, I left him here 2 years ago. And it's just this rubble of bricks being torn down. So, and throughout the movie, well, at that point, then we find Odin, and he spills the beans that he had a daughter before he had Thor.
Right.
And, she was a bit of a hellraiser. She was kind of a bloodthirsty, true, what I guess we would call a Viking.
Yeah.
Goddess.
Wasn't her name Hela?
Hela.
Yeah.
And, so Hela's this bloodthirsty creature that helped Odin conquer the nine realms, and he kind of put the brakes on it, and she wanted to keep going. She wanted to rule the universe, right. And he kind of banished her, and it's his will that's kept her away all this time, and he, for the most part, passes, and I'm really not sure how a god passes away.
Well, it was with the faintest of whimpers, which I thought was kind of weird.
Oh.
And I always thought it was kind of odd that, you know, him being in this frail, weakened, you know, old man, codger, curmudgeon state, he's still able to hold off this strong, powerful woman that, you know, the god of death. You know, I was like, how did that happen? Boy, he must be really good.
Yeah.
I guess that's where our lack of knowledge, you know, I mean, looking at this as purely just a film rather than the lore of, you know, Thor, maybe that's where we're missing something. But yeah, I just thought that was very bizarre that he was able to, you know, fend her off this whole time when he's just this frail old man.
Well, and not necessarily, I mean, it wasn't physically fending her off, but it was his will that was keeping her at bay. And he being, of course, the older, wiser god, whatever that was. And he was worn out. She had been making incursions.
Yeah, how much will can one old man have that's about to die, you know? So, I mean, when they found him, it looked like he had kind of given up on life.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was. So she comes back to kind of claim her rightful place and wreak havoc. Mm-hmm. And through a few tricks, they managed to keep her somewhat contained. You know, one thing, too, I guess, is they completely dumped the whole Jane character. Natalie Portman.
Even when he went to Earth, he didn't even look her up.
Yeah, so I kind of like the fact that it was when they are back on Earth and he's with Loki, and he keeps getting people coming up to him asking him for selfies, you know, and he's like, "Oh, hey, I'm Thor," you know, throwing up peace signs and.
right.
Oh yeah, they're wonderful people. So yeah, this was very much a poking of fun at himself. And you know, probably the last 15 minutes were 15, 20 minutes were Marvel action.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's where your big battle happened. And, you know, of course, the spoiler alert. All right, Jerry, you've turned on. You know, they win. They win and they conquer and beat her back. And the
guy that was taking... I don't know, Idris Elba's character's place at the, you know, the turnstile, you know.
Oh, at the Bifrost Gate.
Yeah. Him, you know, becoming the bad guy because he didn't want to die, and then kind of enjoying it when he's with her, and then all of a sudden at the end becoming the good guy. I mean, it was very much formulaic and cliche, but it was highly entertaining. I really liked it.
Well, it was. There were a lot of cliches. There were a lot of different themes. I mean, there's the reoccurring theme in the Thor movies and in the Avenger movies that Thor will always take his brother back.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that family is, you know, even though they, and again, especially in this day and age, that, you know, the theme of family is not necessarily blood, but, how would you put that, I guess, but it's
very, very Vin Diesel like.
Yeah, very much.
It's for the family.
It's for the family. So what does make up family? And you know, she was blood to Thor, but he had no connection to her. Where he and Loki had this big connection, you know, obviously, through all the through at least all the Marvel universe, looking at the movies. And And Loki keeps screwing him over and screwing him over. And Thor even alludes to, in a humorous way, how the first time Loki messed with him, turned himself into a snake and then scared him, you know, at like 8 years old.
Right.
Which I laugh because I never turned myself into a snake, but I used to punk my sisters that way too. But so we had that theme. We had redemption. We had that whole weird thing with the Valkyrie and Jeff Goldblum, which I'm not sure how that all fit in. Because I mean, again, not a big Marvel.
Well, it was like they wanted to. Well, I'm sure. I'm guessing Valkyrie is a completely different set of characters and a completely different movie and yada yada yada, or you know, comic book series that will eventually be a movie. But yeah, that was a very bizarre world. It was almost like they injected like a Gladiator into the middle of a Marvel movie. You know, we're gonna have this huge, you know, Colosseum, you know, 10 times bigger than the Romans, and we're going to put these people in it that we don't really, you know except for the Hulk, and Hulk's the hero, and he's going to come in and, you know, stomp everybody, and then all of a sudden it's so, he's my buddy, and yeah, no, it's not his buddy.
Yeah.
I thought it was funny that they did the same thing that they did, was it the Avengers, where the Hulk took Loki and just, or Iron Man, I think it was, where he's like, bam, 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 you know.
Oh, he beats him into the floor, yeah.
Yeah, we kind of did that with Thor when they had that gladiator battle.
Right.
You know, like, you're not my friend.
Right. Well, it's interesting that, well, I mean, again, we all know there's the running, well, first of all, so what happens is when they first meet Hela, Loki and Thor are traveling through the Bifrost with her, trying to get back, as a race to get back to Asgard to protect it.
They brought her back. That's the thing. It's like they ran away from her and brought her back to where they shouldn't have brought her.
Well, right. She ends up, kind of.
They were fighting on Earth originally, right?
Right. They were fighting on Earth and they try to get back to Asgard to abandon her, and she gets caught up in the Bifrost and the and taken back to Asgard, and Loki and Thor get kicked out of the stream and end up in this other dimension, if you will, which is a junk world run by this overlord who is Jeff Goldblum, who is both quirky and cruel and has supreme power.
Blue fingernails.
Yeah, blue fingernails. And almost like a geeky bully. Like the kid was like he was picked on his whole life, and then he came to power.
Like he was the bookie in the fight promoter.
Yeah, like right, but he was kind of ruled the world, and so they have these gladiatorial battles, and somehow at the end of Age of Ultron, the Avengers Age of Ultron, when the Hulk is escaping in the Quinjet, he somehow gets sucked into the same thing, and he's the champion because nobody can beat him, and right. They pit Thor, and of course we've seen the commercials all over the place, played for a month. Thor and Hulk do battle, but there's that running joke through all those Avengers movies where the Hulk just flat out punches Thor out of the screen. You know, I think they do that in like four different movies.
Right.
and then we get the flailing beating and how they both actually Thor ends up winning, but they end up canceling the fighters anyway. So they end up buddies again. And plot to escape this place and go back and save Asgard from Hela, who's trying to conquer the universe from Asgard. So that's kind of the whole story in a nutshell. And of course, Thor and Loki win, and Thor and Loki save the people of Asgard. And that was another theme too, is, you know, what makes up a city or a town? Is it a place? Is it a location? Or is it the people?
Because at the in your heart and the people that surround you, or you know, whatever cheesy nonsense they said.
Right. So they kind of went sentimental on us a little bit, and they kind of got goofy, and it was fun. It was an enjoyable movie. The character, the Rock character in the gladiatorial ring. What was his?
Oh, name? The blue guy.
Yeah. The there's a gladiator. Who okay?
He's like a comedian from New Zealand or something. I recognize his voice.
Well, he was. I'm trying to find it here. I'm trying to find his name, Korg. He was the director.
That was the director.
That was the director of the movie, and I'm going to butcher his name. So
that explains why it was so funny.
Taika Waititi, is that how you, Waititi? He does the voice of Korg, and Korg is this rock creature who is kind of a lower level gladiator who does, he's very low key. It's hilarious. I just kind of do the warm up acts and get them ready for the main events and, you know, get the blood flowing and
right.
But an enjoyable character. We'll probably never see him again, but actually plays into Thor and Hulk's plan to overthrow Jeff Goldblum so they can at least have a chance to escape. So very interesting, very funny. I found it to be a little bit of a modern-day satire on the political environment we currently have. That's just kind of what I read into it.
Also,
just that it seems like everybody's, you know, he was talking, you know, revolution and this and that, but he was so laid back. It's like, well, we tried, it didn't work, so we're doing this. I don't know. It just, and then when given the chance, you know, they rose when they were given, they had a champion to follow, I guess, is what it boils down to. They have the opportunity to do that and advance and help out and become part of a community. Up apart from themselves, but very funny. So, but a very big departure from the Thor character we've seen in the Avenger movies and in the first two Thor movies. Would you not agree?
Oh yeah, absolutely. He's starting to lighten up a little bit. Maybe that's what being in love does. That's what Katie Holmes does to your heart.
Is that who he's dating?
Or no, wasn't Katie Holmes. It was the other one who played Jackie.
Natalie Portman.
Natalie Portman, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So we don't see her. She's been brief alluded to as one of the girls comes up to get a selfie from him in Times Square. Oh, I'm sorry about you and Jane. Well, yeah, I kind of broke up with her. They got that boyfriend, girlfriend, who broke up with who. I'm sorry to hear Jane broke up with you. Well, I kind of dumped her. trying to save face, you know. Here's a chiseled cut god and he gets dumped by an earthling. I don't know how that feels, but... But very much a departure. The question I guess I have regarding the Marvel movies and the success I think of Guardians of the Galaxy, for example, how it was, well, that and Deadpool. Okay, let's back up even a little bit more. Guardians of the Galaxy, high comedic value. Deadpool, clearly a comedy, in my opinion, even though it was a Marvel movie and a Marvel comic book character. But do you think we've turned the corner on this now? Do you think we're getting close to jumping the shark on these superhero movies where we got to start making them funny and goofy and poking fun at themselves and just not have that one wisecracker in the bunch? So do you think we've seen the peak? Has this kind of turned the corner?
Well, like you said, I mean, that's three in a row, you know, or I would even say both Guardians of the Galaxies were like that. Very goofy, very funny. You know, Chris Pratt playing the guy he's been in the office forever, you know, just right. Kind of dopey and goofy and, you know, self-deprecating, but, you know, guarded kind of, you know, that trope that, you know, oh, I'm so tough, but really I'm, you know, soft as white bread on the inside kind of guy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and that's the one thing I fear. I mean, I think a lot of people, I mean, I like the Avengers movies and for the action.
Oh, the second one sucked.
The second Avengers movie was...
Age of Ultron.
Was that only the second Avengers?
Yeah, there's only been two.
Oh, man. I just, okay, for some reason I thought that was number three, but maybe I'm thinking Iron Man 3. Iron Man 3 kind of sucked, too. I mean, you're not going to hit the ball out of the ballpark every time. I mean, this is clear. And, but you, I think every character in this movie was allowed to, I didn't find, aside from Hela, who was clearly pissed off.
Right.
There were no really serious characters. I mean, Thor's become kind of a, oh, yes, how's it going? Yes, oh, yes, I'm Thor, God of Thunder, you know. Oh, yes, let me take my shirt off and have a beer, you know.
Well, he's almost a parody of himself at this point. You know, kind of poking fun at himself and very, you know, very lighthearted about everything.
Right.
And, oh, I'm this big man and, you know.
True.
Now I don't have a hammer, who am I? Kind of.
Right. Well, and then we also end up with Bruce Banner. Once the Hulk reverts back to his original self, Bruce Banner, even Bruce Banner's got that jokester where he, you know, in the other, when we first saw the Hulk, this incarnation with Mark Ruffalo as the Hulk or as Bruce Banner and then the Hulk. And we'll forget about Edward Norton and who the other guy was, the first one that was just CGI'd to death. He, as Bruce Banner, had always been a little bit more of a serious, edgy character because he was always on guard trying to watch himself because he didn't want to bring that Hulk persona out. And at this point in the movie, you know, he's the Hulk for two straight years and he kind of lost all that time. So it would make sense for him to be disoriented, but it was... very comedic disorientation. The pants are too tight. Kind of he played the fish out of water character. And well, in a goofy way.
In Rio shirt in outer space.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got his Noggle shirt in outer space with Tony Stark suit on. Yeah, so even that, which who was typically a serious or somewhat focused character, you know, has gone over the edge. So aside from Guardians of the Galaxy and clearly the next Deadpool movie, and I'll be honest, I don't know how they're going to top Deadpool.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll liken Deadpool to, for those of us who remember the 80s or were at least existing in the 80s, I'll liken it to Andrew Dice Clay. First time I saw that guy, I was on the floor laughing because I don't want to say it was fresh, but it was shock humor. You'd never heard people say things like that or act that way. And it was funny the first time, maybe the second time. And then it got old fast because there was no new material. It was just the same thing over and over and over and over again. And that's what I'm worried about with Deadpool is, where are
Andrew Dice Clay was no Ryan Reynolds. I mean,
oh no.
Ryan Reynolds is much more charming. I mean, I think that he finally found a vehicle. He always plays that kind of that guy that he plays in Deadpool, and that personality finally fit something. It's like Christian Bale finally playing Batman, you know, the monotone, you know, no personality guy that he's been in every single movie. Well, it finally fit.
Well, right.
This kind of wisecracking, you know, smart ass in every movie. And I know I'm good looking, but I'm going to be humorous, just, you know, blah, blah, blah. It finally, you know, all the pieces clicked, and you know, that was kind of a perfect vehicle for him. That those two, his personality and the Deadpool character, I mean, they meshed perfectly, I thought.
True. You know, I don't know how much acting goes into Deadpool, but if you follow Ryan Reynolds on Twitter, at all, or follow any of his antics on Twitter with him and his wife, Yeah, I would agree. It's clear that he is the Deadpool character, and it kind of meshed. He tried to build that same character back with the Green Lantern, which was on TV the other day too. And I tried to sit down and watch it again, and
I've never made it through that movie.
Yeah, it's a little, very, very predictable. First of all. And just not well written. Not that a superhero movie needs to be well written, but you know. well, I mean, you know, we have our superheroes.
They do all the ones that you've loved, you know, all the ones you listed: Deadpool, Guardians of the Galaxy, Iron Man. They've all had tremendous dialogue.
Well, true. That's true.
They've all been pretty damn funny.
Yeah, and I would, you know, it'd be interesting. You know, you talk about dialogue. Do you think we could ever get Quentin Tarantino to write a superhero movie?
Black Panther better not be in it.
Well, yeah, that's another one coming out here. I mean, stunning visually.
Oh, I would see that in a heartbeat.
And my concern again is kind of the same concern I had. And I'm going to go back now. Let's go back to George Clooney is Batman. Okay, was it Batman and Robin? It was George Clooney, Chris what's his face, and who played Batgirl? Alicia Silverstone. Okay. Because that had Mr. Freeze in it, right? Clooney was only Batman once, right?
Yeah, it was the Schumacher one. Yeah. Okay. I believe Mr. Freeze was in that one.
Okay. See, I thought Schumacher was the Val Kilmer one.
Because that's, I thought the one that he did, like the one with BAM, you know, where they did all the, you know, the cheesy sound effects.
I guess I should look it up here, but I thought Schumacher did the one with Val Kilmer because that's when they put nipples on Batman. The bat suit. So I can't even remember which bat. Well, anyway. But I was, you know, I thought, oh, George Clooney could be, again, I thought he could be a good Bruce Wayne. But no dialogue in that movie.
Right.
Let's throw a ton of big names in it, you know, because you had Schwarzenegger as Mr. Freeze. You had Clooney in it.
Joel Schumacher.
He did do that one?
Oh. Batman and Robin, he did.
Oh, okay. My mistake then. My mistake.
And, Alicia Silverstone and Uma Thurman.
Uma Thurman, right. So you had some pretty big names in that movie. Mm-hmm. And it reeked to high heaven.
Yeah, it was bad.
It was awful.
Well, because it went back to that corny TV version of the, the very stoic Batman that has no sense of humor, and then everyone else trying to give one-liners. You know, Arnold Schwarzenegger's not a comedic actor.
Oh, come on. You didn't like Kindergarten Cop?
Yeah, I was just going to say, unless you include Kindergarten Cop. But then it's more, you're laughing at him. Then you're not laughing with him. He's the joke. And it's just, it was very much that way. You know, I'd have to go back and watch it, but I feel like I'd have nightmares and PTSD flashbacks. But I just remember it being incredibly corny and incredibly cheesy and just not good. Maybe times have changed, but.
Yeah, I don't think it stands up very well. I would agree with you that. So I don't think it stands up very well at all. And that's going to be. But my concern here is the analogy I'm trying to draw is you had absolutely no writing. You had no story. You had special effects and big names.
Mm.
Now, we don't have a lot of big names in the Black Panther movie, at least nothing that.
What are you talking about? The villain is the guy from Creed and Fruitvale Station. And just I can't remember his name, but he's a beautiful man.
Well, exactly.
And the other guy, he's been in. He was, I don't know.
Well,
racist. I don't know.
Oh, no. And again, we don't have any, and I'll put this in air quotes, superstars, these big Hollywood names that could prop up a movie by themselves. And visually, and maybe not so much, the thing I'm worried about is how stunning the visuals are on the trailers. Okay. Are they going to try and dazzle us, or are they actually going to give us a good story? You know? Cause I think there's a lot there that could go on and a very interesting story. And I just don't want to see a lot of special effects and morphed, you know, animated characters doing a whole bunch of tricks. You know, I think the story is excellent. I think how they planted that seed in the Age of Ultron movie, introducing Black Panther. No, I'm sorry. Back up. Black Panther got introduced in the Civil War movie.
That's where I saw it. I thought maybe I'd be speaking out of turn.
No. This is how much they're all connected. You know, you said it's right. How interconnected everything is. I apologize. It was in the Civil War movie, Captain America: Civil War. Where we see Black Panther having this, I don't call it a bird, but having this put upon him very unexpectedly at a very unexpected time without any real planning to step into that position, if you will. Mm-hmm. So I think that's where this picks up pretty much, right? Black Panther is going to pick up where he comes back to the kingdom, and it's this highly advanced civilization.
His kingdom, or his parents' kingdom.
Right.
Yeah.
And he's got to prove himself, I guess, and with an obvious threat from outside trying to usurp. So I'm hoping it's a very good story. It's got some phenomenal. I mean, like I said, you recognize the faces. I recognize the faces, but I don't follow their careers, so I'm not sure quite who they are. And I'll be honest, as I get a little bit older, I'm a little bit pickier about some of the movies I see, and I don't see quite as many. You know, I guess I've resigned myself to going to Blockbusters.
Yeah.
Well, you know, at $15 a crack for the movie, you know, unless you make it to the $5 movie Tuesdays with the masses, I'm a little bit more particular. I want to be entertained.
Yeah. Well, Fruitvale Station was amazing. Michael B. Jordan he's the villain. I just remembered his name, but he's the villain in the Black Panther movie.
Okay.
And he's tremendous in Fruitvale Station. It's a very crushing, true, you know, kind of, I don't know how true it is, but, you know, based on a true story kind of thing. And then before that, I think he was in Fantastic Four, which was just, that was garbage. I don't know.
Oh,
they can't
yeah.
Make, that... They can't, it's the best of all the awful Fantastic Fours.
I never saw that one is that Rooney? Was that Rooney Mara? No, it was the other Mara, Kate Mara, right?
I thought, what's her face was in it? No, well, maybe it is. I don't know. I was thinking it was, yeah, no, you're right. I just looked it up. And Miles Teller, he was the guy that was in all the Divergent movies.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, Jamie Bell, who was the rock guy.
Yeah. See, this is
it was kind of unknowns.
Well,
you know.
Well, now you talk about the movie Fruitvale Station, okay, and I think this is the line between news. I shouldn't say that, but I'm going to back up here and not try to get on too much of a soapbox, but I guess when I go to the movies nowadays, I definitely want to be entertained.
Mm-hmm.
And for as much as I used to do art house films back in the day, you know, when I was much younger and enjoyed them and enjoyed the story writing and a lot of the art house films, like you said, like Fruitvale Station is so much like real life. It's portraying real life. It's portraying an actual, you know, and even movies like, what was the big winner 2 years ago about the, Archdiocese scandal, with Mark Ruffalo.
Spotlight. Yeah, that was the most riveting, engaging, disturbing film I've ever seen.
Well, okay, right. And I guess I'm the kind of person, unfortunately, that is probably, you know, as far as great a writing as that is, and as far as good of a story as it is, and for as much as it brings to light in an entertainment setting, information about what actually happened and how it happened, even though if it's a little dramatized, there's still truth to that story. It's not fabricated. It's not fiction. I guess I don't want to see every day in my movies anymore. I want to go to a movie that, okay, I'm one of the Roman masses. I want my gladiator fight because making bread all day is driving me crazy. I mean, so
I get your point for going to the movie.
Yeah.
But when it comes to being at home, no, I like all of those. I loved Spotlight. I loved, Fruitvale Station. I guess I like the true, based on actual events kind of movies.
Well,
it is what it is.
Well, I I'm a history buff. I enjoy history. I shouldn't say a history buff, but my mother was a history teacher and I've always appreciated history. And I think I know a little bit more about history than the average person, it seems, at least the people I work with. And I can appreciate that. I have two fears with those movies. One is to make them entertaining, they're going to distort actual facts and dramatize, because it's a drama, okay? And how much of that sinks into the consciousness of people who see those movies and then start to take that as fact. Case in point, the movie JFK. Okay? One man's opinion of the events of the assassination of a president. Okay? Made for entertainment. So
that one man is Oliver Stone. I mean, anything with his name on it, you kind of have to go into, you know, it's kind of like, you know,
well, right.
Oh, it's a beautiful work of fiction.
Well, very true. Very true. Although, you know, I did enjoy Platoon. You know, that was, I'm trying to think, I think that was one of his first big breakthroughs as a writer and director was Platoon, wasn't it? Okay. And I did enjoy it. And I didn't necessarily take everything that happened as fact, but I did take it as how it set the tone for the people that he came across, his take on it. This is what I saw. These are the people I met, and these are their thoughts. Okay. Right. But you see a movie like JFK again, you take it, it's an Oliver Stone movie. You got to take it with a grain of salt. It's going to have his opinion on it. But my first instance of this, where Hollywood movies based on real events, trying to portray real events and filling in the gaps. Okay. This is like the dinosaur DNA. We know this happened. We don't know what happened really here because they're all dead. And then this happened and this happened. So they fill in the events. And then we get this Tyrannosaurus Rex. It's a hybrid that eats everybody. But did that make sense? Was that a good analogy? You have no idea what I'm talking about.
I get it.
But so the first time I had this was the movie The Hindenburg, okay? And this goes back to late 70s, early 80s. George C. Scott plays an American who is on the Hindenburg. And it's a conspiracy, okay? Somebody's planted a bomb or somebody's trying to bring it down, and he's trying to get to the bottom of it, and, you know, somebody wants to try and start a world war by destroying, you know, blah, 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 blah. I can't remember the whole story. But for certain facts were very historic, okay? But the very end of the movie, you see George C. Scott locating the bomb and lunging for it to try and dismantle it or stop it or stop the timer on it. And then, boom, cut the real footage. The thing starts going up in flames. It must have been on television. Or one of my friends at the time's parents had let him go see it or had taken him to see it. And for him, oh, that thing blew up because there was a bomb on it. And there was not, now granted, I'm in junior high, so, but that was his take on it. That was his history. And at that age, you set those things in your mind. And all of a sudden, I'm using that as a historical fact. So using Hollywood movies to substantiate historical fact and teach people history. That's what I worry about, how distorted things get when we get into historically accurate movies, you know?
Well, I don't think you can go into any movie like that. I don't think you can go into a Dunkirk. I'm sure as much as Nolan wanted to, you know, relive that time. I mean, trying to make something like that as historically accurate as possible. I mean, it's, you know, I think they're all imaginative, but yeah, there's going to be a group of people that, cause we're all lemmings and, you know, we're all idiots and, oh yeah, well, they said that that's what they said. So it must be true. I mean, there's always going to be that group that believes that, but I think they're just, I guess I look at it as they're trying to, give focus, bring, awareness. You know, I don't, you know, I mean, did all the lines in Battle of the Sexes happen? You know, did Billie Jean King say all those things, you know, that were in the movie? I guess you kind of have to look at it as a reimagination, you know.
Well, right. And I'm sure
those that, and I'm like, oh yeah, this is what happened. I'm going to learn about history. I never think that when I'm in one of those, you know, I look at it as like a reimagination of history.
Well, and you have, I mean, you have a certain percentage of the population who, you used the term lemmings before, that are, and don't want to look beyond what they're being told. And this was easy because it was a movie and that's what I'm taking as fact. So like things like Battle of the Sexes, I'm sure dialogue written would have been consistent with conversations that actually happened. Okay. You know, based on the era and how people spoke and what was known at that time, I'm sure there were conversations very similar. And obviously you have to paraphrase because you're not the fly on the wall that can write down history, but, things can get distorted when we get into historical fact movies. And right. I was very, granted, they wouldn't be movies. It wouldn't be entertainment. They'd be documentaries then. I get that. But I don't, I think
like an Inglourious Bastards, you know, like Tarantino saying, "Hey, you know what? I really didn't like how that war ended. I'm going to rewrite it. I'm going to make it different," you know, and not in that extreme, but more like you have to, anytime history is told through the lens and the eye of one person, you know, even I'm sure even Steven Spielberg, you know, trying to be as accurate and caring and respectful as he could when writing Schindler's List, you know, I mean, really, how accurate was that compared to Oscar Schindler's life? You know, probably had some relative, you know, gave homage to it, but right. I doubt, you know, there was not a little girl in a red dress every, you know, ever around every corner. I mean,
right.
you know, you kind of have to look at it as, hey, it's a movie.
Well,
and
true.
You're going to be, you know, if you're going to be stupid enough to believe that it is history and you're going to go to a movie theater and learn history, I mean, it just, you know, I think it's more of a sad commentary on our society.
Well, and maybe that's what I'm getting to, because, you know, when you, like you said, I guess I was very, very, very thrilled to watch. And again, this isn't, we're talking movies, but did you get a chance to see the Ken Burns PBS on Vietnam?
No, but okay. I told my father and he was not pleased with the first episode.
He was not?
No. No, he was not.
Oh.
But he rarely is. I'm trying to remember. It might have been, I want to say he said We Were Soldiers was the closest he had ever seen in comparison.
Okay, for his experience.
For his experience, okay. Yeah.
And
but he had never, I think he had never, you know, he was in the middle of a jungle. You know, he didn't really get to hear about the politics of it.
Well, right, right. You know,
he
and
didn't
that's
get to hear about the, you know, the end fighting and the political, you know, manipulation and jockeying and, you know.
Right. And that's what I found very, 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 very interesting, was to get that information. Right. And it did have a little bit of a, and again, it wasn't tremendous. It wasn't slanted one way or the other, but it was very enlightening to me on things we've been told, how it's portrayed, the way people talk about Vietnam, and then to find out that from the get-go, from the very get-go of this conflict, even, well, as the U.S. got involved, and it, you know, we always thought, well, we're fighting communism, and that's the party line I think we all hear, and we had to draw a line in the sand because we didn't want the advance of communism.
Right.
And to find out that how things were managed, how I think there's certain eras in time, if you didn't grow up in it, you kind of look back and you put some of those people up on a pedestal. And I think now at the age that I am, and I look at our political environment now, it's an extreme situation, I think. But, we, you know, there's, I think our world leaders and the people that we have making decisions for us in government clearly don't have a clue.
Well, I'm sure that Johnston could have wiped the floor with anybody that ran against him in this election. and that says a lot given his popularity.
Yeah. So it was interesting to me to see how they approached it and how they looked at it and how it was managed and how they lied to themselves. In this case, and again, the way it was presented, but I mean, just the plain facts of the war, things that this documentary brought up on how, what the management style was of the people who were overseeing this and how clearly they didn't want to accept the fact that the way they were managing it wasn't working. And that's what I found very enlightening, because you had never heard that kind of, at least you know, because I don't read a lot on the Vietnam War, and I'm not, I haven't studied the history of it or gone through a lot of history on it. But how, you know, it was, okay, we're going to do this by the numbers, clearly by numbers, and how doing metrics in war doesn't work. But we're going to do it for 8 years, and it's going to get better. You know? Anyway, that's a whole nother thing. But I did enjoy that, by the way. It was a 10-part series, long. I think I might actually like to pick it up on DVD and sit with it and watch it slower than every night after work, trying to catch up and stay awake. But anyway, that's a whole nother thing. So, well, so anyway, was that a tangent? Did we go on a tangent there? Are we tumbling out of control? We've left orbit and are tumbling.
Can I be into your tangent? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sorry. we're out. We've left orbit and we're tumbling through space with no control. Well, anyway, so we started with Thor Ragnarok. That's how this whole thing started, didn't it? Holy cow.
I would think that if you have the opportunity to see Thor on the big screen, do it. I mean, the visuals are great. It's just a good, it's a Marvel movie. I mean, Marvel's really nailed it. I mean, they've really come into their own in terms of, you know, putting together spectacles that are entertaining, as well as, you know, spectacles.
So you give it a thumbs up, give it a good star rating. I would say so too. I found it very entertaining. It was definitely a departure for the Thor character. Clearly he has come out of the tragic woe is me and I've got to battle through and almost gotten to a comfortable place, you know, like somebody's finally right. Come to the realization they can't save everybody and can't save the world. So we're going to do what we can and make it work as best as we can and realize their flaws. And of course not in Thor's case, but you know, I'm only human. I can only do so much. So, I think a lot of people can identify with that, you know, where you feel you have to be more than you are. And, you know, you have to be either the super parent or the super employee. And you know what? Do the best you can. And that's who you are. You know, you don't need to put on the facade. And so I find it interesting using that analogy too, of how they cut his hair in this movie, you know, clearly a signature thing for Thor. All of those went away. The hammer goes away. And the hair goes away, you know, right. His kingdom goes away. And he's left with a ragtag bunch of people on a basically an ark with his jokester brother, you know.
Now the fire character comes back and takes over and, you know, vows to complete the prophecy of you know, shoving the city into the ground and
Ragnarok, yes,
pummeling it to you know, non-existence, and the sister happens to be there. So was that the rest? That was the whole prophecy? I'm just gonna come level your city.
Well, yes. You know, we find out early in the movie that the prophecy. I'm trying to find the character's name, but the fire demon. The prophecy is that he will bathe in the eternal flame, which is housed at Asgard, which was stolen from him, or at least taken from him, when Odin tamed him in one of the battles of the Nine Realms. And he'll bathe in that fire again, he'll become great again, and he will lay waste to Asgard. And this was this was another theme that I picked up on, and you know, how Thor has to let this happen. He's almost has to engineer it to happen, because the Hela character, the only way to defeat her is to destroy Asgard, because that is where she draws her power from. Right. So he's got to let the prophecy happen. He's got to let Asgard be destroyed so that it can
That's what I'm saying. So the big fire guy destroys Asgard, and that's it? That's the whole thing? That's the whole... He's like, all done, you know, kind of wipes hand. Yay, good.
Well, he destroys that kingdom, and he gets his revenge on Odin, so to speak, and that becomes a part of his kingdom again. Now, if you read the little bits and pieces about Norse mythology, the whole theory of Ragnarok is that it's kind of like a slash and burn technique for growing. Ragnarok was the complete destruction of Asgard and the world, and it sinks into the ocean only to rise back up again and be reborn.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the whole death and rebirth theme, but, you know, and the whole, you got to break a few eggs to make an omelet kind of thing too, you know? So that's how they kind of tied that in to the movie, and that's how they, or at least that's how they utilized that part of Norse mythology. So it was kind of a departure, again, theatrical license, literary license, to use that theme and that storyline to make this movie, you know, at least to bring up that part of the movie, or at least give it that arc. But again, another good theme in there that, you know, sometimes you gotta let go, you gotta let it burn to the ground so you can start over and start over better and stronger. I don't know. That's me. Your thought?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Yeah, and I'll go with it. Yeah, it's getting late.
I just thought it was, you know, like a lot of Marvel movies, it was very abrupt. Where I was like, oh, okay.
Well, but you know, and again, and maybe I read too much into it, but to your thought of what is revenge? Once you've achieved revenge, now what? Right. What purpose does it serve other than it doesn't really even serve a purpose, you know? He seeks revenge, he becomes the victor, he wins, and now what? You know, where do I go from here? What does a fire demon do after you've conquered your biggest foe and the thing you've been, you know, shaking your fist at for millions of years?
Right.
Be careful what you ask for, right? So anything else you've seen lately that tickled your fancy that we should take a quick look at? Anything you want to mention?
You don't like historic stuff, but I just
I like historic stuff.
Jackie on HBO. I thought that was pretty good. I thought it was very funny how her impersonation of Jacqueline Kennedy. I thought it was fascinating. I like Natalie Portman though, you know.
Okay.
It was easy to watch. It was interesting, you know, it was really kind of, wacky other than putting a Skarsgård in his Bobby, but, making Ted and John Kennedy, like they found some like doppelgangers. It was kind of weird, you know, two dead guys. Oh, geez, those look a lot alike. The men when they were young.
So that was HBO, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So entertaining. Did you learn anything from it? Was it?
It was more of a,
Character study for her. Or?
Yeah. Well, it was, you know, the reporter coming in and talking to her after the fact, and her having, you know, kind of the final say of the story, and then her kind of remembering, the shooting, and then the days, you know, after that, you know, we're going to have a procession. We're not going to have a procession. We're going to have a procession, no. You know, just, it was entertaining, you know, but again, it's, you got to like, period pieces in history. Okay.
So it wasn't so much a biopic as it was a snippet of her life at a particular moment in time.
Yes.
Okay, so it was a finite, it wasn't, this is how she became Miss Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis, or...
No. It's just the days of the assassination.
Oh, okay, that's something, I wasn't sure what kind of movie it was. You know, you see Jackie, and you see the pink suit, and you would assume it's going to give you some background on her life before, and some of the compromises maybe she had to make in that position, but interesting. Now that's something I think I might want to take a look at now. So, anything else you got? No.
I got a few in the hopper that I got to watch yet, but I don't have any reviews on
this. I mean, okay. Yeah, I mean, at the time we're doing this right now, this is a week after Halloween, well, a week or two, 10 days after Halloween. And I kind of immersed myself in horror films as much as I could. I guess that's my genre of choice. But
we watched Split too. Just another Shyamalan disappointment, I thought. I mean, clearly the guy is awesome. You know,
Now which movie did you say?
Split.
Oh, Split. Okay. Mm. Yeah, see, I haven't seen that yet. I gotta get into that. That's
Again, it was a Shyamalan where there was a lot of buildup and it was relatively entertaining. And then the end, you're like, oh, for heaven's sakes. It was like watching the mini series of It and being, you know, the old one. I haven't seen the new one, but, you know, you the buildup and the buildup and everything. Oh, my God. You know, the Tim Curry clown. Oh, my God. And then at the end, like, it's a damn spider. You know, that's kind of how it was. It was like, oh, you know, I mean, he was tremendous, you know, his multiple personalities, and he was quite, you know, I mean, clearly had suffered some sort of psychotic break. You know, the gentleman that was the host, Kevin, you never even met him because you were just too busy meeting all these personalities that he had. But then, the end was just, you know, what a twist.
Right. McAvoy did an excellent job, though. I understand he.
Oh yeah, he nailed it.
He nailed it.
A great job.
Okay, even without.
And then I kind of got on the wagon and you know, watching the, you know, the ending in October, and I watched The Happening. Oh God, what a piece of garbage that was! Just another Shyamalan. You know, you just got Shyamalan. He just makes me angry. I don't know why. I don't know why I keep giving him chances.
At least I think we Britton talked about it early on.
Britton's the first one to bash Shyamalan,
right? And I'd have to say I can watch Signs, and maybe because it's the subject matter of aliens and being sci-fi, you know, And again, I will watch shows, stupid stuff on aliens, on the history and discovery, and laugh through it. So, but I'm always interested to see how extraterrestrial life is portrayed in the movies. So that being what it was, and being a little bit, in my opinion, a send up to War of the Worlds. You know, how something so basic can turn the tide. You know, we always think of laser guns and defeating them with tanks and you know, War of the World, it's the common cold. And in this, you know, and in the Shyamalan, in Signs, it's
glasses out.
You know, water, you know, and again, the Shyamalan elements of, you know, the whole throwback to his wife and what she told him and she's dying. I mean, that's the Shyamalan aspect for it. I think if you took Shyamalan out of that movie and made it a true sci-fi horror movie with aliens, it would have done much better.
I don't know, because he keeps insisting on putting Wahlberg in his movies, and Wahlberg's not that guy. You know, Wahlberg is an action guy. He should have a gun and, you know, a high-speed vehicle and running from some robots. I mean, that's his jam. And to try and put him in the whole thing with The Happening, you know, I'm a sweater vest. I'm a teacher. You know, no, you're not. Stop it. Yeah. No, you're not. It's just totally not believable. He's not a nice guy. He's not the, you know, you don't go and, you know, have a couple beers on the porch with him. You know, he can't play that guy. Yeah. You know, that's just not him. And I don't know. I give up on Shyamalan. Yeah. And I'm sure it'll be stupid and another one will be out and it'll be free and I'll watch it and I'll be mad. Yeah, I was so disappointed. I mean, it was such a great buildup. I thought, you know, just every single one of those characters, even the look that he gave, you knew which one of them it was, you know, whether it was the little boy or the woman or the, you know, the crazy guy. And I thought he just nailed it. And then at the end, it's, oh, for heaven's sake. It just, yeah. He just, what a twist is, oh, disappointment. That's what it's disappointing.
Well, I mean, granted, you know, I mean, he kind of hit the ball out of the park with the Sixth Sense.
Yeah, you know, one. Why do they keep giving him, you know, there's so many filmmakers out there. Why keep giving all the people that make garbage chance after chance after chance?
Well, I mean, now let's look at two things here, okay? And from a Hollywood system, okay? None of his movies... And correct me if I'm wrong here. And I'm just trying to think through his movies. None of his movies have, I don't want to say tremendous budgets because of special effects. Okay? They're probably very budget friendly. Okay? And this is the problem I think we have, not a problem, but this is one of the issues with Hollywood is... they're looking at what's my return going to be on my investment. And they'll sink money into a Marvel movie because they know it's going to be billions worldwide. Okay? So to drop $250 million on a movie, yeah, okay, we'll do that because we know we've got a guaranteed return on investment here. You look at a guy like Shyamalan who can probably take $50 million. Let me see here. What was the Happenings budget?
I'm gonna look that up. Well, the only I looked up the one that I thought would be the biggest one, which was Planet Earth or whatever it was called, After Earth, with Will Smith, and that had a budget of $130 million.
Was that a Shyamalan?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, see, I
no, the hell of it.
Yes. Okay, here, The Happening, $48 million. All right. And worldwide, it grossed, it made four times its money back, almost $170 million.
Yeah, so, to me, I wonder how much of that is like opening weekend? You know, how many people went to see that and were like, oh, crap. You know, he has some very interesting concepts, but the follow through on those concepts is just silly. You know, what? I mean, like The Villages, you know, it's like it was an interesting concept. And once you found out why they were there and what they were doing there, it was interesting, but it wasn't carried out to the point where you had any empathy for that girl. You know, it's like, oh, okay, well, you know, you're Ron Howard's kid. I guess you're okay, you know. But you weren't pulling for her in any way. There was no real hero, you know. Oh. William Hurt was, you know, not a nice man.
Right.
It just, I don't know. He just does, I think he has a real hard time finding a believable protagonist, you know, or not even a believable protagonist, because they do their job well, but you know, someone that you empathize with, that you were like, oh yeah, I hope Mark Wahlberg makes it happen. You know, you don't care. It's like, whatever.
Yeah, but you're not a Marky Mark fan either.
No, I never said that. I like him in his element when he has a gun in his hand and is
and his shirt off, and yeah, what else?
I don't think he really takes his shirt off, does he? I can't remember any. He doesn't do it for me like that. He's okay. But, yeah, he's an action movie guy. He's a guy that doesn't have a lot of dialogue, and he's the one that rallies the troops and gets everybody home. That's him. He's not the dialogue-driven boyfriend in the troubled relationship. That's just not him. That's not the guy that he should be.
Well, here I'll take the last. Now, obviously, M. Night Shyamalan has made a name for himself off of The Sixth Sense, and Signs I didn't find too bad. But here, you know, you say, how does he keep being able to make movies? The Visit. Estimated budget, $5 million. Gross, almost $100 million. Mm. That's how he gets to keep making movies. On paper, he's going to turn a buck. Okay? And that's part of the problem with Hollywood. Is, yeah, and again, I'm not stupid enough to say, hey, Hollywood, you have to make art. It shouldn't matter what you spend. I'm not that stupid, okay? I'm not that arrogant. But, you know, you might, in your case, to answer your point, is how does he keep making movies? He keeps making somebody money. And he keeps, I mean, if you got 20 times your investment back with a broker, wouldn't you give him your money again?
It was more of a rhetorical question. I mean, we know that money rules the world here.
But, I know, but so if he's got half a pitch, if he's a good pitch man, you know, if he's great in the pitch meeting, and here's how it's going to be, and da 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 da, oh my God, you're going to love this, and people are going to go crazy, and there's this big twist, and all right, let's sign up. It's funny though, opening weekend. For that movie in the U.S., made 25% of its overall dollars in the opening weekend. So it fizzled shortly after opening, you know, and then going worldwide. But
after people see it, they're like, oh, crap.
Yeah. But,
what a waste.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I I'm a fan of the horror genre. Maybe horror suspense. I like my creature features. I like my demonic possessions, but I don't want 100% slasher or gore. I've never enjoyed the Saw type movies. And as a genre, I'm going to go Saw and Hostel and all those ones you can lump into that thing of let's put people in bizarre situations and see how they react and show blood. And let's see if we can get someone to cut a body part off, you know.
Right.
Never found that entertaining. I guess part of my little guilty pleasures is watching some of the old 80s, early 80s horror movies where, you know, teenager get naked, dies. Teenager gets drunk, dies. and just looking, I guess I find it entertaining looking at it from a cliche standpoint is, all right, let's see how many cliches we can come up with in these movies, you know, the ones that defined it, so... So that was pretty much my Halloween viewing. I really had a hard time finding something I could enjoy.
Have you seen Cabin in the Woods yet?
Oh, yeah. That was probably the last movie. Well, yeah, it was probably the last horror theme movie. And that's been, what, almost 7-8 years?
Yeah.
Oh, no, not even. 5 years. Boy, but it's time flies.
That's easily the best one I've seen in a very long time.
That was very, very entertaining because I like the twist.
Right.
I love that. It was humorous to a certain extent, you know. I loved how they were all betting on.
Oh, yeah.
But it kind of took that genre and
laid all the tropes out.
You laughed about it. You knew what was coming. You knew how that was coming. But then I love how they incorporated some of what I'll call the new mythology, the Lovecraftian type mythology of the old gods being kept at bay. And this is how they had to do it. And the whole control room setting and having it. Oh my God.
Any movie with Richard Jenkins is going to be good.
Yeah.
any movie that man is in, it is good.
So now, did you enjoy Burn After Reading? The Coen Brothers?
I think I have to watch it again. Because I remember seeing it in the theater and saying, what?
Well, it was a Coen Brothers movie.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly why. I'm like, I wonder if I need to see that again. Because I just did not quite... Yeah,
I've watched it a couple times, and it just, for me, the what makes that movie, and again, I was never a huge Brad Pitt fan until I saw, and again, I'm not a huge fan, but I was never a Brad Pitt fan until I saw Fight Club.
Oh, yeah.
And then I was like, all right, this guy's kind of coming around, you know? And then that goofy character he plays in Burn After Reading, just, he is a much better comedy actor than he has been given credit for, I think, in my opinion. Well,
don't you remember him in True Romance? I mean, that was like kind of, maybe there was one before it, but I remember that being like, that's that guy? What? He's funny.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that series of movies he made, like I said, Fight Club was great. I loved his, you know, and again, take it for what it's worth, but Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Yeah, it was okay.
I enjoyed it. I mean, I enjoyed it as what it was. And I'm not saying, you know, he's the best actor on the planet, but if you see as he's gotten older and you see the roles he's taken, and again, that was, I love that just that goofy character, that trainer character, and you know, Burn After Reading. It was just, you know, the whole snapping the fingers and snapping the gum, and I don't know. That made part of the movie for me. That and the God, George Clooney. Two scenes that just blew me away was the one where he has the fight with Tilda Swinton, and he moves out. And he takes his love pillow with him, and he's walking down the street. I don't know why that just put me on the floor. Having this grown man walking down with, you know, the foam wedge sex pillow, you know, fine. And that's what he takes when he moves out. You know, this is mine.
Oh, you need the basics.
Well, yeah, and Francis. God. I'm sorry, what?
McDormand.
Oh, Francis McDormand, yeah. When he shows her that contraption he makes, the swing with the marital aid on it, and the look on her face, oh my God, that's fantastic. I don't know. Sorry. Those are the three things that it made that movie worth watching. Just so goofy. And then the final scene. The final scene with JJ, what's his face? You see him all over the place. God, he does the farmer's insurance commercials now.
Skiing or something like that.
Yes, I'm gonna butcher his name too. Oh, no, J.K. Simmons. J.K., why am I thinking J.J.? J.K. Simmons. I love that final scene with him and David, is it David Rush? I'm looking at the picture. Yeah, David Rush, where he's explaining the whole situation to him of Francis McDormand, and he's kind of like, almost like a funeral director, and there is this concern that, you know, she'd like to have the plastic surgery, and this is how we can make this go away. And I think if we add the tummy tuck, it'll, and J.K. Simmons is just like, what's it going to take? Make it go away. Put it to bed. I don't care. Bury it and do what you got to do to bury it. If it's a tummy tuck, give her the tummy tuck, you know? Anyway, so, how do we get on this? God, we're tangent crazy tonight. So, yeah, so anyway, it was Halloween. I had a hard time watching some horror movies. And I watch a lot of crappy horror movies, boy.
You watch a lot of crap in general.
I do. I do watch a lot of schlock. I think having looked at everything on Amazon Prime, Netflix, and what I can get off of my pirated box, I am thoroughly, thoroughly over with the found footage movie. If I have to watch one more found footage movie because somebody's got this great idea, but it's only three friends, so we can only have three characters, and all we've got is a DSLR or a handheld video camera, vomit. Okay. I'm over with that. The last found footage movie I actually did enjoy was a takeoff on Ghost Adventures. And it didn't get a lot. It didn't get play in the theaters. I think it was a straight to video one, but it was about a bunch of ghost hunters who locked themselves in an asylum, and it was actually mildly entertaining. It didn't go over the top. We didn't have the snotty nose shot close-up crap. But it was actually mildly entertaining. Gave me a little bit of a, you know, gave me a little bit of haunted house spook feel that you don't get with a lot of movies because everything's so ridiculous. So,
well, after Blair Witch and Paranormal Activity, that was it for me. I remember, I don't know, I couldn't tell you a scene in it, but I do recall enjoying Cloverfield.
Yes. Yeah, that was.
But yeah, other than that, I can't think of one that I enjoyed.
Yeah, Cloverfield. Yeah, the original Cloverfield had a good feel to it and a good story. 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Yeah, I never watched that.
Okay,
I bought it on Apple and they did not give it to me. They ended up refunding me because it did not play for some reason.
Okay. Not a bad movie. And again, that had a nice little twist in it at the end, which was very entertaining. Because you know, it took you down a lot of different paths in a very short period of time. That was entertaining. But yeah, I agree that as far as the found footage, because 10 Cloverfield Lane was not a found footage film.
Yeah, it didn't look like it.
It was not, but it was very, very entertaining. I've appreciate John Goodman. He did very well in that movie. He played a guy slightly off center very, very well. Mm-hmm. And for as goofy as some of the characters he gets stuck with and plays, and he did very, very well in that movie. But yeah, I would have to agree. But yeah, so looking at everything and just, I mean, watching 10, 15 minutes of something and seeing how low budget it could be was, it was the found footage film is done, over with. Can't watch it anymore. Won't watch anything that's even remotely like Saw. It gets very, very, very frustrating for me. So I've kind of gone to the tongue in cheek. Do you remember Joe Bob Briggs Drive-In? Used to be on Cinemax or the Movie Channel or something on Saturday nights at like midnight.
Nope.
Oh. Well, Joe Bob Briggs is a character, and he would rate his movies, because there are always schlock horror movies that he would put on, or some kind of schlock, some kind of B movie was always what I shouldn't call it schlock, I'll call it a B movie. Was it Joe Bob Briggs, or, yeah, Joe Bob's Drive-In Theater, there we go. And he would sit out, he'd sit out in front of his camper in the middle of the Arizona desert, and he would talk about the movies for 10 minutes, and then he'd play them. And he would always rate his movies based on, like, there's 12 fire demons, 3 beheadings, 4 naked breasts, and 1 tarantula, you know? So that's kind of how I take my movies now in the horror genre, because I think I have exhausted every possible viewing avenue. Although I do enjoy when they play the Hammer films on AMC. Turner Classic Movies, TCM, did run all the Christopher Lee Dracula movies back to back to back to back for a while there one weekend. Got to say, I still like the old Hammer films. So, but that's been a long time. So I think the last Christopher Lee Dracula movie was 1972. So much for that. So care to add anything else before we wrap up?
No, can't think of anything. Right. Go see Thor Ragnarok.
All right. So yes, definitely both thumbs up. We agree. Enjoyable movie. Plenty of entertainment there. Bit of a departure from the brooding Thor we've met in the past. And good time. And I think you can take the kids to see it, right? It was only PG-13, right? There wasn't anything awful. There were no off-color jokes. There were no...
So, take the kids.
Take the kids. What the heck? Fill them with popcorn and movies.
Sailor if I had one. Yeah, let them see it. Who cares?
So anyway, great. Fantastic. Aaron, I want to thank you for taking time again to join us. Absolutely. And to co-host. And I'd like to thank everybody for listening. So if you have comments, questions, observations, or just want to berate us, you can send emails to our email address, which is listenupmke@yahoo.com. That's listenupmke@yahoo.com. Take a minute, and for the whole 27 people that subscribe to us, go on Apple, give us a rating, get us noticed. So yeah, please. We have really no rating at the moment. So go on, rate our podcasts, rate the overall podcast group as well as the individual ones. Help us get noticed so we can annoy more people. So that way you don't have to feel special.
You are special anyway.
Yeah, you are special. You've taken the time to listen to us all the way through. And you know what? In closing, and she'll probably never notice this, my wife loves to listen to our podcasts, but she usually listens to them before she goes to bed. So she's never heard the end of one.
Aww.
Yeah, so I should probably put something at the end to see if she ever notices. I'll see if she mentions this. Anyway, so... so, all right, but if you get a chance, please give us some kind of rating. Help us get noticed. Getting noticed gets us listeners. You giving us feedback makes us a better podcast. So please take a minute, drop us a note. I'm at Twitter. Twitter handle is also at listenupmke, as well as the email. And our podcast host is Podbean. So you can go directly to our hosting page where you'll find links to some of our guests and some of their associations and some of their organizations as well. As well as past podcasts if you want to catch up. And that is listenupmke.podbean.com. So this is your host, Steve Italiano, and co-host Aaron Koenig, saying goodbye. And thanks again for listening.